Ray, we've got 657. Let's deal with that issue and get out of our hair. And Tommy and you guys, 657, is that one about the pasteurizing of fluids in the system? And they got some amendments to this bill that everybody is supposed to be on board. And I'd like us to Ray Phelps, yes, thank you very much, to come up and send your amendments to Ray, if you would. I'm going to open the public hearing on, you're not even public hearing, I've seen you? Work session on Senate Bill 657.
Well, you know, I don't know why I bothered coming early. You can't get anything straight.
It's the environment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the next two amendments are the amendments that we're speaking to. And basically, they do four things and receiving information to that effect. First of all, it provides the statement of Oregon's policy to encourage innovative technology. And this is important because it will encourage different people and or organizations in the private sector to invest and bring online new technology needed to process septic sludge. And that response will minimize the public costs. If there should be that be needed later. It instructs the DEQ in Section 5, and instructs DEQ to establish by rule a program to regulate the various aspects of the septic process. And this will be the uniform rule, so that regardless of where you are in the state of Oregon, you still operate under the basic rule. The third element is in Section 6, where it authorizes DEQ to enter into agreements with counties to perform the duties of the department related to the various aspects of handling the septic waste. And Section 7 limits the land applications to those pumpings included with municipal waste that is first processed through a treatment works operated by the city or county before land application, or the septic that is treated according to the Brisbane State Law and Administrative Rule. You've also got a packet that is in a binder where we went and did as you asked after our first hearing, and that was we worked with the various interest groups after the first hearing. With respect to the Department of Environmental Quality, they've been extremely helpful, and they are neutral. The other research we did at the behest of several members is a concern that a possible monopoly might occur. There is no monopoly possibility in as much as there are 41 manufacturers of various kinds of equipment to handle this septic sludge, and there are 15 different types of filtration processes. And there are now currently four companies in the Northwest, that which includes my client, Clearwater Technologies, that can handle this kind of process. I've listed below that the names of the individuals who came here and testified against the initial 657, and each has, and there's a document following this summary sheet that indicates that they support the Tax 2 amendments. And so I think I'll just answer questions.
Questions from committee. Well, it's a skill from this here. I mean, there's no mandatory language in here that causes anything else, right?
No, so that's in Section 6, where the counties and the state can enter into agreements.
Right.
Move the Dash 2 amendment to 657.
Clerk Corker, move the Dash 2 amendment to 657. Any discussion? Objection? Okay, now clerk, call the roll, please. No, that's
aye.
Chair, aye. Dash 2 is adopted. You move the bill now, right? You want to move the bill?
I'm happy to. Move the bill.
Clerk,
the bill is amended to the floor with a due pass, Mr. Chair.
Clerk, and move the bill to the floor.
Well, Mr. Chair, I screwed up. What I meant to say was I moved this to Ways and Means as a subsequent referral with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Corcoran moved Senate Bill 657 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Yes, that would be your Ways and Means, not my Ways and Means. Do you have more members?
I don't think you have any ways.
I don't.
I definitely
have no means.
Any concerns, any thoughts, any ideas? Have not hearing that for call roll, please.
I think you're mean-spirited, too, Mr. Chair. I'm an aye.
Aye.
Chair, aye. Senate Bill 657 has passed the Ways and Means this recommendation.
You want me to carry it, Mr. Chair? Ways and Means?
Let me ask you, sir. Sound like a huge challenge.
Thank
you. Thank you, Craig. I'm going to open the, close the work session on Senate Bill 657 and open the public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 1318. And ask Mr. Sean Berry and Mr. Messerly if they'll both come forward, please.
I've seen enough to recommend that Messerly today already.
You can do that.
Very confused anyway. He's part of the Portland Mafia. We heard testimony about that this morning.
That's the Messerly. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Ken Messerly, State Representative for District 48. District 48, is that better? Which is Coos Bay South. My interest in is testifying in favor of Senate Bill 1318. As we're developing the program or the project to bring natural gas to the Coos Bay South Coast area, we realize that the might be a problem in bringing the pipeline across across EFU exclusive farm use properties. So this amendment, which would allow a utility pipeline with the restriction that they be buried at least 4 feet below the surface, is the amendment dash one of the bill. If you'll find it in two places within the bill. It just clarifies a lot of the issues on the EFU land and particularly in the marginal farmlands. Again, we think it's a good addition to the bill. Clarifies not only for the Coos County project, but possibly for other projects throughout the state.
Thank you. We're going to go ahead and ask you for all testify and the questions from the committee.
I Representative Shelley testify too. He's here. What's that?
Yeah, he's probably on a different issue.
Oh.
But we'll ask Mr. Berry to go ahead. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Berry, representing Northwest Natural. With me today is Cara Kelly, our head legal counsel, and we have a out-of-house counsel today also with us, Margaret Kirkpatrick, with Cole Reeves, who will be here to answer any questions. Rather than me get into this, I will probably turn over to Cara here, and probably with her testimony, go take you through the bill and answer any questions.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Carla Kelly. I'm the Deputy General Counsel with Northwest Natural. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here today on Senate Bill 1318. We support the Dash 1 amendments to the bill and urge you to support them also. Unlike the current language of Senate Bill 1318, which removes the necessary standard from all utility siting decisions, what the amendment does is it changes the current law only for linear facilities, including underground natural gas pipelines. Linear facilities are pipelines, electric transmission lines that don't occupy a big plot of land but simply cross land. Under the current statute requires that a county find that a utility is, and I quote, necessary for public service before it may be permitted in the EFU. And under recent case law, if you want to put a utility in the EFU, what you have to prove is that there are no feasible alternatives, and that's the language, no feasible alternatives for constructing that utility facility on non-EFU zoned land. This is an extremely difficult test to meet. There could easily be alternatives to a particular facility that might be considered feasible, but that are not practical, economical, or good public policy for reasons of safety or environmental protection. Moreover, no applicant can ever be sure that it has identified and evaluated the feasibility of every conceivable alternative. A proposal that's based on excellent alternatives analysis could still meet opposition and argument that one or more wholly new, non-EFU alternatives are feasible. The burden of proof in any land use proceeding is always on the applicant, and therefore the applicant would have to evaluate and prove not feasible of all the newly raised alternatives. Because the courts have not defined feasibility, we're afraid that this burden could be impossible to meet. And therefore, we propose to change the necessary standard only for linear facilities, that is, the long lines that are least disruptive utilities to farm use. Once constructed, these facilities take very little land out of production. In the case of natural gas, the pipelines are buried 4 feet under the ground below plow depth. Farmers can grow any crop except timber right on top of the pipeline. And we have many examples today of productive farms that operate with gas pipelines underneath. The other problem with applying this new wrinkle on the alternative test to linear facilities is they just don't lend themselves to an alternative, to that kind of alternative analysis. A linear facility has to connect one point to another point. There may be many reasons why it cannot go in exactly a straight line, but if there is a significant amount of EFU land in between the two points, there will be no way to avoid the EFU without uneconomic routing around it. In some cases, it will not be possible to route around it. In other cases, it might be possible or feasible, but 10 times or 1,000 times as expensive. As the law now stands, there's no standard to measure what should be considered not feasible, and no limitation on the types of alternatives that have to be considered. Our amendment includes a formal restoration clause squarely placing the responsibility on the utility siting the linear facility to restore any disturbed land to suitability for agricultural use. And we believe that most conflicts between linear facilities and agricultural uses can be resolved through economic mitigation, which we are prepared to support. We have been asked, and you may hear further testimony, about why linear facilities can't just use the public right-of-way, which where such facilities are now permitted as of right. And there are several answers to that question. Sometimes we can use the public right-of-way, but sometimes the public right-of-way is not wide enough for a given facility. The public right-of-way may have other utilities in it, and so whatever utility you're needing to put in it, there may not be room for, or it may not be compatible with the other utilities that are already in it. Sometimes the public right-of-way is on the shoulder of the road, and when you have erosion conditions or flood conditions, that shoulder just disappears. We had a situation in where we were looking in Columbia County at a roadway, and the roadbed was there, but the public right-of-way, after the rains, was just pretty much gone. And there was nowhere we could put it unless we dug right down the middle of the road, and that creates its own problem. It's not only expensive, but if you maintain it, you have to close the road to put it in, you have to close the road to maintain it.
Mr. Chair, I just want to point out for the record that the reason the roads are bad is because of the Republicans. Go ahead.
Would you find out members of our committee, we may need a map for all. Go ahead, please.
Okay, and in some places also the right-of-way isn't safe for a pipeline. So where it's certainly a route that should be considered. It may not, it doesn't work to just say you can only go there. And in specific cases, there may be very strong policy reasons for siting utilities on EFU land. Public safety is one of those reasons. The EFU land tends to be flat. It's in the valley. And it may be the safest place to put a pipeline. If you put it across the hills, that's where the soil makes wide. Dwellings are sparse in the EFU zones, keeping pipelines out of areas where many different digging activities could impact an underground pipeline. And pipelines are compatible uses with farming practices. The current law protects the EFU to the exclusion of the protection of other resources needing protection, such as the fish and wildlife habitat. If you have to avoid the EFU and it moves you to an area where you've got fish and wildlife problems, you end up with an unbalanced situation where the necessary test takes precedence over all of your other siting considerations while you're trying to avoid the EFU land. We offer this amendment because we believe that the necessary standard might be an important protection to deal with large nodular facilities that take many acres of farmland out of production and potentially cause problems for adjacent farming interests. But we think it's inappropriate use of local government and ratepayer resources to have to take linear facilities through a process designed for cellular towers or water treatment plants. In any case, if you're talking about a very large facility, a very large pipeline, or a very large transmission line with a pipeline that's more than 5 miles long, more than 16 inches in diameter, you already have an alternative and needs process to go through the Energy Facility Siting Council. The recent case law turned the law for utility facilities in the ESU on its head. Right now, that necessary clause applies to things you put in the ESU which are permitted uses. But it's such a hard test to meet that it makes it more difficult to put them there than the things in the section which are conditional uses. And in that conditional use section, now you have cellular towers over 200 feet, and you have electric generating plants, and a whole lot of other things, which actually have an easier test to meet than the way the necessary steps now exist in the law. So it's backwards. So in conclusion, I urge that the linear facilities and especially pipelines which do not take agricultural land out of production on a permanent basis be exempted from the necessary standards. Thank you.
Carl, Mr. Brady asked, currently Oregon has natural gas pipelines in various parts of the state. We have natural gas piped into the northern part of Oregon.
Mr. Chairman, Tom Berry. To the northern part, the northwest and northeast. To the northwest of the Asbury area, yes, we have natural gas in that area. Natural gas is also in the northeastern part of the state served by Pacific Gas Transmission Lines. We have gas in the northern parts, both northwest and northeast. The only place that natural gas, that we do not have natural gas currently, is basically down in the southwest coast, which includes Coos Bay, Cokie, and Brandon.
Thank you very much. Any questions, you folks? Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Ellen McNeil, Larry Dyke.
Hello, I'm Ellen McNeil. I'm a Christmas tree grower in Washington County. And Larry Dyke is president of the Washington County Farm Bureau. So we'd both like to share with you some of our experiences. We are in opposition of the Senate bill and want you to know that we believe that there are some impacts to farming from underground utility facilities, some of which can't be mitigated, and many that have financial and disruptive impacts to farmers. We have a situation in the Berry Creek Valley, the northern part of Washington County, 10 years ago. It's a 10-mile valley with prime farmland. And 10 years ago, Northwest Natural installed a 16-inch transmission line through our valley. And the farmers did not know that there was any protection under the law for them. We were all told that Northwest Natural had the ability to condemn our land. We had no choice. In many cases, the pipeline was put right through the middle of the field rather than along the edge, where it would have less impact. In our easement agreements, many farmers wrote in that it was very important to them that the topsoil be separated from the subsoil during excavation and then returned in the right order so that the land would still be productive. One of my farmer friends, Paul Saddleman, said that he saw the trenching work and the soil was separated on both sides of the trench. But then when he came back a little later and they were filling it in, they were just shoving it in together, mixing it all together. By the time he got there, it was too late. And in most cases, it took about 5 years to restore productivity to those areas where the pipeline was installed. The farmers had to improve the soil to bring it back to productivity. If nothing had been done, then areas where the farmer did not do anything, that land is still not growing anything. So we experienced problems, some of which I think could be handled, mitigated in some cases. And I like the fact that Northwest Financial is proposing some language that would require the utility companies to do that restoration work. That is a step in the right direction. That would give us some protection. But there are still some things that can't be mitigated. In my circumstance with Christmas trees, it would be very difficult to separate the topsoil and then put it back on the top because of the crop. If you cut the trees and then you've got all those roots and you, if you were to yank them out, the soil would be all mixed together. So in some cases, it's more difficult to protect the resource of the soil that we have. In our situation with Christmas trees, when you have a 50-foot strip, the easement area that you need for a large gas transmission line is quite wide at 50 feet. And those trees are removed from the area before installation, and you cannot replant an 8-year-old tree where the 8-year-old tree was. You can't just temporarily remove those trees and put them back. That crop is destroyed. In our situation where we've worked hard over the last decade to build a customer base and have customers who are expecting certain species of trees each year, it's very disruptive to our operation and our planning to have 1,000 trees removed 1 year from our crop rotation. And then to go back and replant that small strip of trees with young trees makes our whole operation inefficient, because in one area you have little baby trees and next to them you have larger trees. It's not the way that a farmer would design his field layout, in other words. Hope that makes sense. Some other things that are difficult to mitigate would be for perennial crops. You have blueberries, strawberries, any nursery stock crops that take more than a year. When you destroy those crops, you have it takes a while to replace them. It's not quite as simple as it sounds to just pay for the crop damage. There are many restrictions on the easement area, which restrict what the farmer can do on his own property. So we as farmers feel that our property rights are being violated. We're not allowed to put any buildings in the easement area or permanent trees. You would not have the option to plant your fields with timber later on if you desire to do that. And there are many, many restrictions in the easement agreement with a gas pipeline where you need to have permission from Northwest Natural to do many things, such as install a culvert, irrigation lines, drain fields, utility lines, wells, roads, driveways, fences, any digging that you do, planting anything over 5 feet, you need to have written permission. So there is a lot of restriction on that 50-foot swath of your farm. Then in the future, any time that you as a farmer need to install a new tile line or drainage line, you have this large gas pipeline that may be in the way of those things that you need to do, even if it's buried 4 feet deep. And another point that we wanted to make is that the farmer continues to pay property tax on that piece of property over all the years, even though his use of it is limited. 10 years ago, when Northwest Natural came through our valley, we experienced problems with broken tile lines where they excavated, and some of which were not repaired. There were erosion problems and so on. We did not realize that we had any protection under the law, and recently, this winter, when Northwest Natural proposed to place a 24-inch pipeline through the same corridor, we learned that we did have some protection under the law because of the necessary standard. And if you remove that necessary standard and if utilities do not need to look at feasible alternatives before going through farmland, we will really have no protection at all because they have the power of eminent domain. Another factor that I want to point out is that the utility companies will always prefer a large tract of land because they will have fewer people, landowners or property owners, to work with, and the wide open spaces make it cheaper for them to install their facilities. So the large tract is always going to be preferred over small parcels, and therefore the real farmer is the one who is being penalized the most, as opposed to maybe a hobby farmer. So it's very difficult for those of us who are trying to make a living farming. In our situation, Northwest Natural was planning to put their pipeline under the county road, a mile up the road from us, because that was really the only place that they could go. We asked them to consider putting the pipeline in the county road instead of going through our field, and they said that they did not want to do that because it would be more expensive. So in our situation, we feel that the right place for public utilities is in the public rights-of-way, but it will always be cheaper for the utility companies to use farmland instead because it's wide and open, the farmland has a lower value, and they don't have to repair the road. So the farmer is the one who will always lose if you remove the necessary standard. We aren't opposed to the idea that at times it may be necessary to be in EFU land. If there is an area where there are landslides or other factors that make it infeasible, then the EFU land may be the appropriate place. But we would really hate to see the law weakened and not give the farmer any protection at all.
My name's Larry Dyke. I'm a full-time farmer up in Washington County. I'm also the president of the Washington County Farm Bureau. I've been farming for several years and have been paying for my farm for over 20 years, more than half my life. And I'd like to just talk a little bit about my experience with Northwest Natural as it relates to the 24-inch pipeline that they proposed to put in. They sent out letters last spring saying that they were looking at possibilities or routes of running the pipeline. And I responded to them and asked them to please look at other options. Well, during the summer, they came out and said that that the line was going to go through my property. And I asked them, again, not to put it through my property, and asked them if I did not want it, what would happen. And they explained to me that they would condemn my property, use the condemnation process, and take it. So my options are either try to negotiate a settlement with them, or they'll take it and then pay whatever is determined. Also, after that, why there was a CPO meeting in North Plains, and at that time in the meeting, why they also told everybody at the meeting that the question was asked whether they would look at alternate routes if people did not want it through their property or not, and they said that even if alternate routes are available, they would use their condemnation process to run the pipeline where they intended to. Finally, when I received my appraisal for my property from the Northwest Natural on the property, on the amount that they wanted to take, they send a copy of the condemnation procedure with that proposal. So I guess now if you're a farmer out on the farm, they come out to your place and tell you they'll condemn it. They go to the meetings and tell you they'll condemn it. And then they send out the condemnation procedure to you. I guess you feel like you have none or very little rights. And I guess that's where this bill would then strengthen their position or get their position back to that they could condemn their property. It would be an approved use to run it through farmland. And we would have no rights whatsoever. The farmer would have no say on whether he wanted to go through their property or not. And I guess that can apply to all of us, to any of us. I don't think anybody sitting here would want somebody to come tell you if you own a farm or a house that I'm going to run the line through your backyard, I'm going to run it through your front yard, I'll run it wherever I want because I have the authority of condemnation and also now I have the law on my side. If this bill passes, they have the law on their side that they can do as they please.
I guess, you know, the one issue, though, that I would ask is, what about the issue of burying a 4 feet and returning essentially the part that they used to its previous condition? I understand where it could be a problem with Christmas trees, I really do, and 7-year crops, but what kind of crops do you have on your...
I have row crops. I have contracts with the canneries. Some of them are still in business, some of them are no longer co-ops. But bottom line is, farmers plan. I plan my rotation. I know where I'm going to plant certain crops in years ahead. I have a rotation that I use. When they come in and say that we're going to run this through the middle of this field, well, in one field, as a matter of fact, one of the fields that I was going to plant corn in, the line was to go through it, and I changed my rotation. I planted spring wheat in it the other day because I had already made provisions. Last fall, when they told me they were coming through, that I set aside some other properties to do that. So they disrupt your crop rotation. They also, in addition to that, why it disrupts the soil. You can try as much as you want to separate the soil and not to compact it or whatever else, but it's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing. Because certainly, if you're out on wet soil, you cause physical damage to the soil. You change the soil particle makeup, and that the soil, it takes years for an element. And we've seen instances where it's been 5 years before the soil returns to its natural state.
I think farmland is a natural resource, just like our fish, just like anything else. And I just heard Northwest Natural say that to run down other places is much more expensive. And I'm sure that was the same thing that was said 20, 30 years ago. It's much more expensive to burn coal, right? We need to put dams in the river. I mean, it's much more expensive, you know, I guess it's cost. If it always gets down to cost, well, I guess none of our natural resources would be around anymore. They mentioned the idea of cell towers, about cell towers. Cell towers, they do not, as far as I know, cell towers do not have the right for condemnation, the cellular companies, including their towers. And they're not here. They're not here now talking to you today about having this bill changed. They can put cell towers in. They seem to be able to work it out with people. Northwest Natural's approach is we want condemnation, we want the law. And a long time ago, I heard a definition of fair. And if you bear with me, I'll give you my definition of fair. Fair is in a position of being able to determine what is fair. If you're Northwest Natural Gas and you have the authority of condemnation, you have the authority to have the law on your side, well, then fair is to do, run the line wherever you want. That is fair. And we will pay you fair. Okay? That's the definition of fair. If you're on the other side...
Let me ask you about fair, if I may.
Yes.
Is it fair that we have the condemnation process, or is it fair that we try to pass legislation to give you some additional protection?
Okay.
Simple question.
Can you say it again, please? I guess.
Is it fair to use a condemnation process, which apparently obviously has impacted you folks, or is it fair to try to pass legislation to make it a little bit easier to deal with?
Okay. One or the other. One or the other. Okay.
Is it fair?
No, I'm sorry. One or the other may be fair. One or the other may be fair, but with both, we have no option. We have no choice. Okay?
Yeah, if they have the power of eminent domain, plus this bill, then we have nothing.
Well, apparently they don't need this bill. What you folks are saying.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. On the 24-inch gas pipeline, the Northwest Natural proposed to run through our property. Okay, they stopped short of Dairy Creek Valley, and I don't know if you're all aware of that. They end up stopping the pipeline short of Dairy Creek Valley because of the opposition, because of the law. They stopped the line short, and that's why we're here today. Okay, they have to get the law changed so that they can continue to run their line down through our valley where they want to, and for the property owners not to have any say. That's why we're here today.
Well, why we're here today is for natural gas pipeline to the south coast.
Okay.
Taking off on I-5 down south of Eugene, not Washington County, folks.
Senator Connell, I understand that you want to improve your economy and I think that if there were a way that you could make this bill be a help to you in your area but not impact the whole Willamette Valley, that would be a lot preferable, because right now the way it's worded, it has a huge impact to farmers in the Willamette Valley, and not only for natural gas pipelines, but also water lines. In Hillsboro, a couple of years ago, there was a 72-inch water line from Forest Grove to the high-tech companies in Hillsboro that they also wanted to put through farmland. And so we're seeing more and more of these kinds of disruptive facilities through the farmland.
Well, so I think we've heard what your concerns are, and then we'll end up bringing back the folks from Northwest Natural Gas. The first thought is any questions from the committee members up here. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Berry, I think there's some questions we need to ask you. Senator George Ank has some ideas.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I wasn't here when this began. I had a group of great kids in my office. We were having fun playing toys. Not a valid excuse for not being here.
Mr. Chairman, for the record again, Tom Berry, Northwest Natural Gas.
Okay. The question is, we have just recently had a natural gas line run out from Newburgh out to a farm in order to provide natural gas to the fryers at the Silbert fryer of missiles. And the thought we had, the first time that I saw them digging trenches, are you going to run all the way out to Yarn Hill? Because if you are, I need a connection too, as another farmer or another dryer, rather than burning propane and having trucks end up and down the road bringing up stuff to us at a very much higher cost. Under these agreements, is there any way the grower can petition to get connection to these lines, even the big lines? Is there any mechanism to do that?
We have our legal counsel, Carla Kelly. I'll let her answer.
For the record, Carla Kelly, Northwest Natural, Chairman, members of the committee. There's a couple of answers to that. The way that lines get hooked up to individual services is regulated by tariff through the Public Utility Commission, and it would depend upon the distance, what the cost would be, and who would pay the cost for that. Second regulation on that now exists is in the county land use laws. There are some restrictions on facilities that can or cannot be hooked up to main lines, and those depend upon whether it's a farm use. If it's considered an urban use, you can't hook it up. If it's a farm use, you can, and sometimes we have done things which we call farm taps to hook those up. So I guess that question, you know, we'd have to look at what the property was and where it was coming from, and I'm sure our marketing department would be happy to analyze it.
Is the grower totally at your mercy? I mean, this is a litigation that's going to occur if they decide to resist the condemnation. There's negotiation that's going on all the time. I have four or five lines to go across a piece of property of mine, and every time we said, well, no, we don't think this is adequate, they've always come back with what I thought was a reasonable offer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, the use of condemnation we use, as far as I know, our company in the last 20, 30 years has never used condemnation. By law, we have to put it into the notification that goes out to the landowner, but we have never really exercised ever that I know. So,
relative to the damage that might be done, I looked at what the wording of the bill, and I have a question. Let's say, for example, you had the grower that was here a few minutes ago who had, let's say he had corn growing for a cannery, and all of a sudden you decided you were going to run out across your cornfield. What would be the process? I mean, could you wait for the harvest to be done? Would you go out across where his irrigation equipment is working? Because that's kind of what it sounded like, is that you would just plow out across existing crop land in order to accomplish your pipeline. How you would treat that grower?
For the record, Carla Kelly, Mr. Chairman, Senator George. In almost every case, what happens is a negotiated process between the company and the grower, and I cannot... Since I've been with the company about 10 years, I don't know of any condemnation process that we've actually had to go through. The condemnation process exists in statute. It is there for the public benefit, and it is a way of determining a fair value. But what actually happens in practice is condemnation takes a long time, and we don't usually have a schedule that allows us to actually go through that process. We end up, we negotiate a settlement. If there are damages that occur later, there is a process for coming back to the company to recover on those damages. And what we're proposing in this legislation is to make it absolutely crystal clear, because we did hear from farmers who were impacted by the pipeline 10 years ago that they were that things happened later that they hadn't anticipated, and they were unhappy about those things, and they didn't know they had any rights against the company. That's why we're proposing put it in the face of the statute that the company is responsible for restoration.
So this doesn't change that. This does not change the responsibility of remediating the problem. I keep plugging my dialogue box, something like that.
No, it does not change the responsibility, but it makes it more visible. The responsibility, I believe, is always there. And we have a claims department that very actively has to deal with those claims. But this does make it more visible, because we certainly learned in our last siting process that there were people who were unhappy, who had not thought they had any recourse against us, and we wanted to make sure that that the restoration issue was addressed up front.
Whether negotiating, he's here. I'm going to ask one more question. Say the grower said, well, normally I run my tile deeper than most people. I put them in at 4 feet. Would you drop it down to 5 feet or 4.5 or something like that to make sure there was never any chance they would contact the pipeline?
I believe in certain cases we have done that.
Thank you.
Okay. Tom, I got some concerns. I don't want to impact any private property owner with big business. Do you folks let me finish first, Tom. If someone makes an allegation that you've damaged your property, do they have the ability to come back on Northwest Gas and make restitution and ask you folks to make restitution for the damage cost?
Yes, sir, they do.
Okay. Is that in the law now, or what is, how, where is that?
If I may answer that.
Bring those civil lawsuits.
Well, no, this is a civil lawsuit, and there's also the easements that we normally have with people say that we have to make restoration.
So property owners do have recourse with the company.
Something they've always had that, yes, sir.
Okay. Any further issues, folks? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I kind of like having that gavel, Mr. Chair.
You do?
Why don't you give that thing back over here?
Mr. Doherty. Mr. Chairman.
I hope we're not keeping any of the residents in any business. Wait. Is that your Senator Duncan impression?
Mr. Doherty, welcome.
Hello, my name is Dan Doherty. I live in Lake Oswego. My family and I own a farm in northern Marion County. I'm opposed to this bill as written, and I think I'm opposed to the linear facility amendments, too. There's a section in here, or there's a part of this bill that I don't think you've considered at all, and it's one that's impacted us for the past 6 or 8 years that we've been fighting with the legislature about continuously. And that is, it would piggyback municipal water wells along with pipelines. And municipal water wells, there's a well that goes in the ground, it's a vertical pipe, and there's a transmission line that's buried in the ground that goes out to it. So it doesn't sound like much, but the impact that it has on agriculture and on private property rights is huge. And by that, I mean that when you put a municipal water supply were a well into a EFU zone, you're looking at chemicals, taking up chemicals into that water supply that you wouldn't normally have to worry about on agricultural land. And what the municipal water supplier does is he tests for up to or over 100 chemicals. And if they find those chemicals in even parts per million or parts per billion, then red flags go up and the EPA comes in and they do a Superfund cleanup. And the EPA does the cleanup, and they hand the bill to the city or the municipal water supplier, and he then sues everybody that's left aquifer. In that case,
can I ask one question? Have you seen the amendments?
I saw a little bit of it, but I think I'm not sure that you'd be clearing municipal water wells out of that
by changing back to provided to necessary.
If you switch back to straight back to necessary, that would be fine, but the linear facility might still include, because you're talking about a transmission line, both that vertical well shaft and the transmission line still buried underground back to their water supplies.
Well, can I bring up, would you mind, I know you're in the middle of your testimony, but I want to clarify this while you're on that subject, because their amendments revert back to the original language, and they're shaking their heads vociferously back.
Mr. Neal,
well, I still need to, in case those amendments haven't been adopted. I don't know if they have or not, but I still need to make my point.
Okay, well, go ahead and make your point. I'm sorry.
And then you can bring them up to testify. So you have a situation where you've now put a liability on farmers. And I do know that about 3 sessions ago, the banking industry tried to pass a bill that limited their liability. And the reason they wanted to do that is because they didn't want farmers rolling over their loans and the land turning back to the bank, and then they have to put up the money for the EPA Superfund cleanup. And that specifically was something that they had addressed in their bill, and they didn't get it passed. So when you start allowing municipal water wells and agricultural lands that have put chemicals on them that may have been legal 30 years ago, that were banned 20 years ago, they'll still show up in the water supply 10 or 20 years from now, then you've got liability issues. Now, not only do you have a liability issue for the Superfund cleanup and the cost of the $3 million or $3 billion cleanup of an aquifer and the suit that would follow that, but you have wellhead protection, which is a massive area around the well or well fields, And what that does is it allows, or what they tried to do a couple of sessions ago when we went through this and had all the work sessions down here on that, EPA wants the local municipality to be able to control the irrigation, chemical use, and crop types on land in within the wellhead protection zone. Now, that would still be administered by the county, but they would be the ones that would be sued by the private landowners, but they would have to administer that as the municipality that was controlling the ground or had the municipal wells there wanted. The additional thing beyond that is that you have this groundwater capture zone. Now, that could be 100 square miles because EPA is...
Mr. Brody, I'm a little confused. We're talking about natural gas.
We're talking about natural gas, but this, as the bill is written, is allowed under there. It takes away the county's ability.
Let me suggest you look at dash 2 and look at them again and see if they still have that, if you have the same problem.
Have they been adopted?
No, they have not.
Then could I just continue?
Yeah, if you'll focus on the dash 2s and on the issue of about natural gas, if you can.
Well, if I could be guaranteed that municipal water wells would be removed from those, then I could focus on that. Otherwise, I've got to continue on, you know, on this one tack because there's a lot of private property rights you're stepped on here if it's allowed in.
Well, the problem I have is trying to confuse the main issue with other issues like water and the wellhead issues and this sort of thing. When we talk about natural gas pipeline, and trying to focus explicitly to that issue of natural gas and not water.
I know you're trying to focus on that, but the bill as written, if it was passed without these amendments, even if it was passed with amendments, would have a direct impact on me, and then I'd have to come back in a lawsuit or whatever and say, well, they didn't intend to do this, but they did.
Right, and that is not the intent of this committee, which is on the record.
But the way the bill is written, it just simply replaces the word necessary with the word provided. It doesn't say, gee, you know, for Dan Doherty and for these other guys, you won't be affected. It simply does that, and all the other utilities are piggybacked.
So really, I think we understand your concerns. We've got your testimony, so I'll walk through the rest of the folks who want to testify.
Okay, but...
And even here, look through those dash 2s again, and maybe talk to some folks out there that you know that's involved in this process and see if it ease your mind a little bit.
Okay, if you could clean up, though, on the dash 2s, if it would allow municipal water supplies, I would really appreciate it if you could take those out, because those specifically have a huge, huge impact on private property rights and farming.
Take a look at that.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We make sure that the water rights is not an issue with this bill. Okay. Mr. Schellenberg. And Don, if you're going to talk about water, you share your own.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Don Schellenberg, representing the American Farm Bureau. To the dash 2 amendments, I just call your attention to line 7, where it simply says utility pipelines, and it doesn't say that it's just natural gas pipelines. Mm-hmm. And so, in defense of the former testifier, I'm not sure that the dash 2 amendments limit it to natural gas pipelines. So, that's all I want to say about that. I'm sorry, dash one. You're correct. I'm sorry. I'm offering a new set of amendments, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, yeah.
That's all we have to ask
you. Okay. And listening to the testimony and looking at the amendments as well as the bill itself, maybe just like to recount it in this way, because of unfamiliarity with the law, the utilities prior to a few years ago had what you might be called the advantage. As you've heard, they pretty much did whatever they wanted to do because the landowners didn't know that they had any law that would allow them to challenge any of the decisions. And because of the lawsuit, the landowner now has property right protection. The bill, as drafted, removes all protection for landowners and allows all utilities to site without looking first for alternatives or ways to minimize the impact. This is essentially a supersiting bill for transmission lines. is the way the bill is drafted. The amendments actually do the same thing, but they limit it only to transmission lines. So in a sense, you have a supersiding bill here for utility transmission lines. And it doesn't define utility transmission lines. So we don't know what all utilities are included in this, but it's any transmission line, at least it's underground. It does make that restriction. The proponents of the bill complain that it's easier to cite some utilities because they are a conditional use, and that is an easier test than the current necessary test that they're required to go through under the permitted use. I would maybe offer the dash two amendments now. We would welcome an amendment to make the siting of the utility line as a conditional use. And that would allow then a review of the issue by the affected parties to determine what the impact would be on agriculture and how the impact could be mitigated. That could include a decision to site the transmission line, for instance, along the side of the property instead of down through the middle of the property. Right now, under this law, the way the amendments are drafted, there isn't any opportunity for the landowner to have any input on where, from his perspective, would be the best way to run that line through his property. He's left to sit there and take whatever comes. So that would be our concern with this bill, our concern with the amendments, and until such time as they are changed to meet those concerns, we'd have to oppose the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenberg. Any questions with Mr. Schoenberg?
Thank you,
Johnson.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Johnson. I'm with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. I apologize for not having organized thoughts here. I have not seen the
data before this committee.
Yeah. I have not been provided with a copy of the dash twos. I was just provided with a copy of the dash ones right before the hearing, so my written comments were related to the primary bill. Well, we have dash ones. Well, then I do have some more comments. Okay. Number one, the dash ones do indeed only say utility pipeline. They do not say gas pipeline, so this would involve all pipelines, water, gas, whatever. It could even be a slurry of coal pipeline if you wanted to look at it that way. And it also includes electrical transmission lines, which are above the ground. Electrical transmission lines can impact agriculture in terms of aerial spray application. They can convert farmland that's no longer available because it's under lines or under towers or the like. And so what this bill would do is basically take away any review that we currently have for alternatives to those impacts to agriculture. I hear a lot about how something that's buried doesn't have an impact on agriculture. Well, in my experience, in my farm family, when we subsoil, we're going 6 feet deeper or more. There are lots of instances around the country where somebody subsoiling has hit a gas line. So
how deep do you subsoil?
I have subsoiled 6 foot deep.
Okay.
It depends on, again, what soil conditions you're dealing with and the like. You go to Mount Hare County where you're dealing with some of that fragiopan below the surface. You have to subsoil to make the soil manageable. Otherwise, it's basically a class 6 soil. If you subsoil, it now becomes a class 2 soil. So it's a management option. It's a big foot getting pulled through the soil to basically break up the... But I want to get back to the main issues here. The current law basically requires an alternative analysis, and the proponents of this bill testified to you that there are several reasons why they need to locate on farmland under certain circumstances. Without a necessary standard or an alternative analysis, you can't look at these reasons. I mean, we would be the first to agree that under several circumstances, it's necessary to locate on farmland. What this bill would do is basically take that analysis away and just say you can locate on farmland if you're a utility facility, utility pipeline, or a transmission line. No review. It's just permitted outright. Pipelines can be rendered to be compatible. Sometimes they're not, as you've heard from some of the farmers. my knowledge of the land use laws, there are no utility facilities that are conditional use permits. They are approved or reviewed under a utility facility necessary for public service. That includes cell towers. If someone is included approving a cell tower outside of that, they're not following the state land use law. There's nothing under sub 2 of 215.283 or sub 2 of 215.213 that has anything separate for cell towers or other types of utilities. They are basically reviewed as a utility facility necessary for public service. So basically, in the past, the review standard has been, are there alternatives? This would basically take that review standard out. I would like to point out that there is a working group currently in process to try to define, to better define what the necessary standard is, to put some sideboards on it and the like. The farmers that are amongst that group have had some problems with that, but they are willing to look at when are those alternative safety reasons, engineering reasons, whatever that needs to be better defined, but they're not willing to give up the analysis. In other words, don't just say carte blanche, you can go out onto farmland with no review. The farmers are saying, let's look at whether there are other alternatives. If there aren't, great, then you need to come out on farmland and we'll work with you on that. And I'm sorry for, again, not being very well organized, but that would be the extent of my comment.
Mr. Johnson, thank you very much.
Jim, the reason for 200-foot towers is aircraft fly under the line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you agree with that?
I agree.
The current law already specifies 200-foot towers.
Mm-hmm. It exempts those. I guess my point would be what this does is basically just says pipelines and utility transmission facilities. And when you start mixing and matching like that, you're opening it up to interpretation again.
Okay.
Thank you.
I wanted to recess the public hearing on Bill 1318 for the purpose of opening up the public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2424. And Mr. Shetty, I apologize for putting you as long as we have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was scintillating.
I bet it was.
Besides my...
They don't have to use those big words when I'm representing.
Interesting.
Thank you.
Besides my wife's chair needs to practice. For the record, Wayne Charlie, State Representative for House District 34, and I bring you House Bill 2424. For your consideration today, a very simple bill that asks the legislature to recognize in Chapter 215 of the statutes what nature has recognized already, and that is that if you're west of the summit of the Coast Range, you are not in the Willamette Valley. That's what the bill does. If you're west of the summit of the Coast Range, you're not in Willamette Valley. That sounds pretty straightforward, but if...
Sure, I knew that.
Well, Mr. Shelley, we don't need a bill. Obviously, we don't need a
bill. Oh, but we need a bill. Oh, but we do need a bill.
Okay.
Here. Because if you look at lines 18 through 20 of the bill, the Willamette Valley for land use purposes is defined as Benton County, among others, under current law. It does not recognize that there is a settled portion of Benton County, that being the Alfee Valley, that in fact is over the summit of the Coast Range. And so we have this little finger valley that's got their community in it and folks that live there, that is west of the summit of the Coast Range, but for land use purposes is captured as if it were valley. It's kind of a strange thing. I have heard about this... almost kind of a land use vortex up in the Alcide Valley. You know, things just never have seemed to fit. And it was working with DLCD in the interim where the light suddenly shined and we realized what the problem, or at least one of the problems is, that these folks are up there in one of these coastal finger valleys, but they are nevertheless treated as Willamette Valley land as far as land use statutes go. If you look in the current law, the statute does make a distinction in Lane County. It divides the county at the summit of the Coast Range. But for some reason, when they drafted the statute, it apparently escaped anyone's notice that there was a portion of Benton County that, like Lane County, was west of the summit of the Coast Range. And so it, I think, was inadvertently brought into the Willamette Valley. DLCD supports this bill, calls it the Truth in Geography Bill. I think it's passed on the floor of the House by a vote of 59-0. Substantial support over there. It's pretty straight.
Mr. Chair, it was 58-0.
I did it again.
It can't be his vote concentration when he comes over to committee here.
Representative Chevrolet, I think we're tracking an aggression that you're trying to
you've got a sheet here from Ron Eber, DLCD supporter, that shows exactly what would happen. But there was a question
we're
about...
We're going to ask him to wag his hand in a moment.
Okay.
Question to Representative Chevrolet.
Would this liberalize the rules out there in that area? Mr. Chair, I believe that the count may, I think they're thinking there may be as many as 12 to 15 new houses in western Benton County as a result, at least potentially as a result of it. Plus the Walmart, Target, and Rite Aid shopping center. But that's just
I thought it was kind of like a sinister attempt to get the language law.
Okay, any further reference, Shelby? Thank you very much.
Chair, appreciate your support.
Mr. Eber? Are you okay to face, Bob? Okay.
Bob Rindy, for the record, with the Farm Land Conservation Development. I'm sorry Ron had a meeting he had to run off to. For the record, yes, we are in support of this bill. And I personally have never called it the Truth and Geography Bill, but it sounds like an accurate thing to apply.
Thank you, Bob. Questions, Mr. Okay, thank you very much. One of the Senate testify on House Bill 2424 will close the public hearing in the next session on House Bill 2424. Senator Corcoran.
Move 2424 to the floor. Finishing fast.
Senator Corcoran moves House Bill 2424 to the floor. Group House recommendation. Discussion. Objection. Your Senator Clerk, call the roll, please.
Senator Corcoran.
Yes.
Senator Boyd.
Aye.
Senator Shannon.
Aye.
Senator
Bartle.
Yes. Chair, I House Bill 2424 passed the floor. Group House recommendation. Senator Corcoran is offered to carry the bill. We're going to go back into the public hearing on Senate Bill 1318. I ask Mr. Eber, Mr. Rindy, to come forward, please. This one requires some amendments, I think.
My name is Bob Rindy. I'm with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to read the testimony and take your time that Ron has provided you with some brief testimony here, and in addition, he put together a fact sheet, that's the second sheet here, utilities, facilities, just so that, I'm sorry I can't walk you through all of these details, but you would be welcome to call Ron if you have some questions on it, but the point was here just to get you some background on what the law is and what some of the case law. Again, our concern with this bill is primarily that which was related to you by the Department of Agriculture, that the Necessary for Public Service standard does at least make sure that there will be mitigation and that these public service providers will look for an alternative route. It's simply a standard that makes sure on the record that there is a reason for going across farmland, and typically there is, and I don't think that's necessarily a hard standard to meet, but it is at least a standard, and we would be concerned about removing the standard. I echo Mr. Johnson's comments that there is a work group right now. I know I talked to Burton Weiss yesterday that he was going to meet that day. I don't know how that went yesterday, but that's on with regard to 2865 and House Bill 3392. I think it's a very similar issue, and would really urge that to hold up on this for now, and that if we could in some way encourage the proponents to be part of that group, we might be able to find some middle ground.
Mr. Rooney, thank you very much. Any questions? Well, thank you. Mr. Berry, I think we've got some things to iron out with Senate Bill 1318, and so I'm going to close the public hearing and suggest that we look at narrowing the scope somewhat. And have you heard some of the concerns that folks have expressed today, and maybe we can address those issues as well. And you and I can chat about some amendments to the bill and bring it back. Okay. Any further questions from the committee on this? I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1318. I'm going to open the public hearing on and possible work session on House Bill 2164. Mr. Meyer.
What did you say? I'm just on the whole home.
Okay, we have it yet?
You should. I have some more questions.
Okay, go.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Byler with the Water Resources Department. You are being passed out our written testimony on this bill. This is a Water Resources Department bill that we worked on over the last year with stakeholders, and come to you from the House side. The testimony, written testimony, is pretty comprehensive on what the bill does, and I'll try to give you a kind of thumbnail sketch of what's behind this bill. In its most basic form, this bill is resurrecting and restoring some temporary provisions that have been in the code since 1993. Those temporary provisions expired in 1998 at the end of the year. And they basically are provisions which allow the department some flexibility in processing water right applications in very certain circumstances. In this case, in certain cases, we are unable to process applications because of our basin program rules. These basin program rules are rules that direct the department on, developed by our Water Resources Commission, which give our broad policy and management directives for each major river basin in the state. These rules have what are called classifications, which designate the types of uses that will be allowed for new uses in each basin. These are rule-based directives, and they sometimes can create problems for water users in that the rules may not contain some types of uses or they may not contemplate some uses that could come up down the line. Some of our basin plans are a little dated, and this particular bill provides flexibility for situations where a water right applicant proposes a use that is not classified, not contained in the basin program, allows our commission to grant an exception to that, and thereby allows our department to process the water right permit despite the fact that that use is not contemplated as a new use in our basin program. So it's a simple tool. It gives us some useful flexibility. During the 5 years that it was in place, from 93 to 98, the commission granted these exceptions four times only, and it's a rarely used tool. It allows us some flexibility to deal with hardship cases or other types of water uses that may not be contemplated in our basin program. The bill on the House side had an amendment dealing with two issues. One, and then another sunset was provided to have this provision expire in 2003. And there was also an attempt to clarify some of the language, and which leads me to some amendments, the -3 amendments that you have before you, that we think are the answer to the questions that were at issue in the House side, and an issue that was confusing to the committee. Basically, the issue boils down to the use in this bill of the commission accepting an application for a new water use. That is antiquated language. In 1995, Senate Bill 674 changed and revamped our water right application process. And what it did, in part, was every time the Water Resources Commission was mentioned in statute, it changed that to the department. And it's now the department that accepts water right application. This particular provision that's contained in this bill is in a different statutory chapter, and it was not updated to be consistent with that. And therefore, it has an antiquated language talking about a commission accepting an application. And in fact, the department does that. This provided some confusion over on the other side, and we attempted to clarify. We think the -3 amendments clarified in a much more concrete way. It does not affect the substance of the bill. It still has the same intent that we used since 93.
Tom, the House side never saw the -3s, and did they before you kicked them below with us?
We did not have those at that time.
I didn't ask you to hold the coordinator, the administrative coordinator for the House side, and just bounce your -3s off and bring it back next Tuesday or Wednesday.
Okay.
Questions, Mr. Butter? Okay, Tom, thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on 2164. I'll bring it back next week after we make sure that the house is going to feel pretty comfortable with the dash tree. You can say I'm seeing it.
Are you still going to be in the mission next week?
I am.
I'm going to be out of here by like tomorrow.
Sir, what? Really?
Well, President Adams says he has a budget.
What are you drinking, boy? Okay, Posey, we are closed and ready. We're open. Open the public hearing on 2165.
Open the fire. I think that's go without an end. Market taste is a lot more pleasant than this. Her grandmother and everything to get that those discussions with it. These guys just grab, blah, blah, blah. It's just changing the law, changing the bear.
Tom, go ahead and ignore the traction.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, Tom Byer with the Water Resources Department. I apologize that Martha Tager couldn't be here today.
Give her our best regards and her grandchild, too, please.
I certainly will.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Please don't.
Go ahead on with your testimony, please.
House Bill 2165 is another agency bill that we've worked on with stakeholders prior to the beginning of the session. It does two things. It would modify the statutory definition of well and provides some clarifications in our well construction statute. The basic result of this bill would be to preserve the status quo. It does not change anything substantive in the law, but I want to give you an idea of why we wanted to bring this forward. To change the definition of well, we feel is needed to allay a concern from our council regarding the possibility that someone could construe the definition in a way that would conflict with some of our administrative rules. These administrative rules involve what are called temporary geotechnical holes. These are holes that are temporary in nature, lasting no longer than 72 hours. They tend to be very shallow. They're used for initial groundwater monitoring for quality and for static level purposes. They are then abandoned and sealed according to current standards that are agreed to by the DEQ and our staff. These particular types of holes, these temporary holes, we have separate rules relating to those that are different than our requirements for regular permanent wells. We feel that these changes or these different standards are appropriate. They were developed with a rules advisory committee, which was broadly representative of folks who are interested in these issues. The concern that our council found was that the definition of well could be construed to include these geotechnical temporary holes with the definition of well, and then would have to be dealt with as permanent wells are in our statute. This change in the House Bill 2165 would clarify that issue. The second issue involved in this bill is simply to make sure that all references in the well construction statutes are consistent in that they refer to the construction, alteration, abandonment, and conversion of wells. Currently, the statutes are not consistent in the use of those terms, and basically would just be a technical change to make sure that those four terms are where they should be in the well construction statute.
Question about it?
Okay.
Well, I guess not. No one else is trying to testify on House Bill 2155. Anyone else from whom I testified? Is Jerry okay with this?
Mr. Miller, you want to testify on temporary geotechnical holes?
Good boy.
Good boy. Thank you.
I didn't ask him.
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, for the record, my name is Jerry Schmidt. I'm here today representing the Oregon Groundwater Association, who did look at this bill. They had some concerns on the other side, but I could get no uniformity amongst my folks about how to approach the issue. Some of the concerns were that they were wanting to know if this bill was fairly treating water well owners in the same respect as geotech people were getting a cut from the fees. I could not get like I said, a uniform position for my folks, so we decided to take no position. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's fantastic.
Mary George?
Thank you. This converting the well to a change in the use of an existing well, there's a lot of old wells around, and some of them, you know, that have been abandoned. And let's say, for example, you've been if you didn't like the quality of water at the time, you want to go back and start pumping that for another such as irrigation. Would you be paying, working through the fees in this thing, or could you just do that in the current well? And probably that's a question for both of you.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, my apologies. I believe, I'm by far not an expert on well construction law, but I believe after a well has been abandoned, that one would be required to go through the regular process for a permanent well in that particular situation.
Hmm. How would you? What would determine abandonment? Is there a period of time that I didn't look close enough to see if it was in here? I don't see it. Is there a period of time in which the well has not been used?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, abandonment is a technical term in this case. And requires certain actions by the well owner to make sure that it's sealed properly and that no elements could enter into the well once it's sealed properly.
Well, what about reopening it then? I mean, if that had not been done, I've seen places where people have an old well casing sticking up out of the ground that should have been sealed and welded shut, but they didn't. Let's say they want to go back and use it for another purpose. Maybe just call for a minute and they said, well, I want to irrigate it. Where are they in this process? Would this affect it?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, this would not have any impact in that situation. In fact, this bill preserves the status quo in terms of water law relating to wells.
Okay. Senator George, members of this committee, I would agree if, however, a well is abandoned through the technical procedures of abandoning a well, usually by going through that procedure, it renders the well unusable because you have either cemented it or made it otherwise unusable. If you have not permanently abandoned the well and went through the abandonment procedure, then you could convert the well so long as your water right is appropriate to allow the appropriate use. So if, in fact, you had a use that was allowable under your water right, there would be nothing prohibiting you from using that water for that use, unless your water right restricts it. So I don't know if that clarifies. If you did have a casing, the example that you gave, a casing sticking out of the ground, and let's say it was for domestic and irrigation purposes, you had primarily used it for domestic purposes, but it was polluted, so you were not using it for a period of time, but then you decided to irrigate with it and your water right allowed you to do that, you could do that. If, in fact, you went through the abandonment procedures, you would not be able to do that. You would have to go completely through the procedure again.
Brand new well.
Yes.
Anything further? You should keep going? Okay. Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on Hospital 2165. Open the work session on Hospital 2165.
Okay.
Senator Corcoran. Senator Corcoran moves Senate Bill House Bill 2165 with four due process recommendations. Discussion? Objection? Senator Kirk, call the roll, please.
Senator Griffin?
Aye.
Senator Griffin?
Aye.
Senator Chairman?
Aye.
Senator Lash?
Aye.
Senator
Turner? Chair, aye. House Bill 2165 passed with four due process recommendations. Carrier?
Aye.
Senator Chairman will carry you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Close the work session on 2165 and open the public hearing and possible work session on 2281, right?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2281 requires local government to include a certificate of mailing indicating the date mailed when sending a notice to the Department of Land Conservation and Development of an amendment to an acknowledged comprehensive plan or land use regulation or adoption of the new land use regulation, and specifies that failure to include the certificate of mailing with notice of intent filed does not render notice ineffective. Mr. Chair, Chris Crane,
you want to give Chris a call then? Mr. Miller may testify in this bill.
Mr. Miller says you're in the newspaper. Why don't you just leave him alone?
This is a good land use issue. You got to learn land use issues. You're so good at it.
Yeah, three sessions and it hasn't taken, buddy.
That's exactly right. We keep trying, but you just don't understand.
You got any good jokes, David?
No. What do you
do? You don't have a sense of humor, do you? They surgically remove Republican sense of humor when it's in.
Oh, no.
I'm on 7th.
You folks here just for hecklers? Welcome.
All
right.
Well,
that's
going to
be
our
pardon me?
That's my
insert. Oh, I didn't think you had one.
Nobody wants to, but I'm forced to. I went over to OSU and I grabbed
you going, Greg?
Said, you're coming to my office.
You're running away?
I'm not done with you, Mr.
Hey, you got to sit down. I mean, he's got some more picking to do.
Yeah, get rid of that Jerry Garcia guy, too. That thing is ugly.
And Doug, nobody asked you to come in here and hide either.
Yeah.
Because we're on the internet.
Good.
And people are listening.
Well,
my name's Earl Carno.
Yeah, right.
Well, if the folks can't take courses.
Actually, they would know it's not Earl Carno. Sure, they wouldn't be able to understand me.
This is Earl Carno. I'm here in Fifth Falls.
On House Bill 2281. Did you get that, Guy? Okay. Crane.
Chair Tarno, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Crane, Deputy Legislative Counsel. Although for purposes of this hearing and this bill, I am representing the real estate and land use section of the Oregon State Bar, of which I'm a member of the legislation subcommittee. And I just ran down from the fourth floor.
I took your time.
A little out of breath. House Bill 2281 was introduced last session. I don't recall what bill number it was. It passed out of the House and it didn't get out of the Senate before the end of session, so it was revised by the committee, the legislation subcommittee of this session for this session. It requires when a local government amends its comprehensive plan or one or more of the land use regulations, they have to submit notice of that to the Director of Department of Land Conservation and Development. When they make that determination, when they make that formal adoption, it starts a 21-day clock, and a person who objects to the new regulation or plan amendment has 21 days to appeal the decision to LUBA. People being what they are, they often wait until the 21st day to get their appeal in to the Land Use Board of Appeals, raising the question of exactly when did the 21-day clock start. This bill suggests that when that notice is mailed to the Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development, they include in that a notice of mailing that shows the date on it. So months after the fact, people don't have to kind of scrounge around to try to find the envelope that it came in with the postmark on it. There have actually been cases to trying to figure out, do we use a testimony of somebody who says they mailed it the night before, the postmark is the next day for determining when the 21 days is. This would require somebody to include a notice of the certificate of mailing to nail down that date and time so that they would know when the 21 days is up. And that's all this bill does. Technical fix makes the lawyers happy. Ooh, that probably just killed it.
Questions on the screen? No. Okay. None? Chris, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing. House Bill 2281 and go into work session on House Bill 2281. Very quickly.
Need 2281 support to take that. Quite effective upstairs.
Senator Corcoran, new House Bill 2281 was forwarded to pass recommendation. Discussion. Objections? Hearing on the clerk, call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Okay. This is Chair Rye. Chair Rye. House Bill 2281 passed the forwarded pass recommendation.
Good.
Okay. I'm going to go, Sherry. Thank you, Jerry. Close the public work session, and we're all adjourned for the day.